The other night, my wife Tracy and I went to the movies. She would tell you that, from her perspective, this happens all too infrequently. That most of the time when she suggests it, I will be what she would call, or what my mom would call, a stick in the mud. And I would say, I'm tired, or I'm busy, or can we talk about it maybe next week? We went to see the movie Hidden Figures, which is the true story of three black women who worked for NASA in the early days of the space race back in the early 1960s. In addition to being an uplifting portrayal of their courage and accomplishment, the film is a poignant reminder of the indignities and discrimination and danger that black people routinely suffered in this country under Jim Crow segregation. In our lifetime, some of us anyway, if you're over about 55 or so, bathrooms and drinking fountains and restaurants and many workplaces were segregated, marked either for whites or for colored. I myself can never know what it was like, what it is like, to be a second-class citizen in your own country because of the color of your skin, or because of your gender, or your religion, or your ethnicity. But that movie poignantly reminded me of how often here, in what we like to call the land of the free and the home of the brave, how often we have fallen short, how often we still fall short of our professed ideals, of how much we have left to do, how much there is to repair and to make amends for. So I hope you'll go see Hidden Figures, because this beautiful and powerful story deserves to be seen and celebrated. Brilliant black women who had the deck stacked against them from the start, who still persevered and succeeded, but still were forgotten, were unheard of until now. And I hope you'll go see the film because it's good to be reminded of our recent history in this country, how the power and the force of our government was solidly behind this American apartheid, treating citizens of color as if they were less than human. And we would be foolish, wouldn't we, to think that all of that simply vanished with the passage of the Voting Rights Act, or when a black man was elected president. Because you know, in 2013, our Supreme Court pretty much gutted the Voting Rights Act. And you know that the current nominee for the U.S. Attorney General, Senator Jeff Sessions, has a record of working against people of color, especially those who were active fighting for civil rights. If the events of the last year have showed us anything, it's that our work, those of us who believe in equal opportunity, in liberty and justice for all, is far from done. Because we have seen with our own eyes and heard with our own ears the prejudice and fear and hatred that is being projected these days on all kinds of people who are seen as different, including people of color, immigrants, Muslim Americans, women, even disabled folks. The question is, how are we going to respond to these challenges in this time? Are we going to stand up and be companions and allies to those who need us? Or will we end up looking the other way? Will we care, but be too busy, too distracted, too tired to do much about it? Will we say, I'm tired, but my faith calls me to do this? And if not, then what is this faith of ours worth? Our worship theme this month is power. And some of us have an uneasy relationship with power. Some of us tend to think that power is inherently bad. We equate it with evil and oppression. If you're inclined to think this way, you may remember what the 19th century English historian John Acton said: power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think he was cynical about power. He may have had good reason to be so. It's easy to be cynical about power these days, isn't it? Too often, those who have power abuse the trust that's been placed in them. Why should we be surprised that in our capitalist system, most corporate CEOs are not tree huggers and human rights activists? The system rewards those who know how to make a profit, not those who want to share the wealth or be good stewards of the environment. In the same way, our political system rewards those who look good on TV, who know how to raise money from political action committees and other special interest groups, who know how to get elected, which is not always the same as knowing how to govern or how to serve the common good. So as I said, it's easy to be cynical about power. But we can't afford the luxury of cynicism these days, can we? Our world needs you, your presence, your voice, your action. And you don't want to end up cynical and bitter and resigned to feeling powerless, do you? Nobody wants to feel that way. On this day, when we remember Martin Luther King Jr., his life and ministry, it is good to hear his words about power. He who was thrown in jail multiple times, who was beaten and had his life and his family's lives threatened, he understood that power is too often harmful and abusive, that too often power is about preserving the status quo, keeping things the way they are, exercising power over others. But he knew the truth that power can and should be used for good, that power can and should be shared, used to help and empower others. If you hope to change things, you need all the power you can get, right? We could make a distinction between responsible power and abusive power. Power with rather than power over. Think of those pencils bound together. We heard Martin Luther King talk about this in our reading this morning. He said, "One of the great problems of history is that the concepts of love and power have usually been contrasted as opposites, so that love is identified with a resignation of power and power with a denial of love. What is needed is a realization that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice. And justice at its best is love correcting everything that stands against love. I place my faith in communities like this one because it is here that we try to remind you that you are loved, are worthy of love just as you are deserving of love, and you don't have to do anything to earn that. And once you realize this, once you really know this deep in your heart and in your soul, aren't you then led to realize that everyone else is also worthy and deserving of love? And once you have been touched by this love, this life force, aren't you compelled to go out and share it with others, especially those who need it most? Aren't you compelled to work against anything that would try to destroy or diminish that love? Reverend King said, "Justice at its best is love correcting everything that stands against love." And isn't that what you do when you feed the hungry or stand with those who are being marginalized, when you write your elected leaders, when you march on Washington or Boston? You are working to correct everything that stands against love. And there is so many different ways that we could do this. Ingrained deeply in the great religious traditions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam is the commandment to care for those who are left out and left behind, the poor, the marginalized, the oppressed. These traditions all say that those who have been given power are compelled to use that power to help those who lack it. This is what it means to be religious. Not saying pious words or warming up a pew in church one day a week. Not using your power only to enrich yourself and your friends, but living for others. Helping and serving those in need, building the common good. And you know, I think already, that this is how one finds meaning and purpose in life, right? By looking outside yourself. This is what Jesus was talking about when he said, "Those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, they will save it." We remember and we celebrate Martin Luther King because he was a modern-day Moses, leading his people out of bondage and into freedom. But you know, that was only where Martin Luther King started the civil rights struggle of the 1960s and 1950s. His work in that arena led him to see how much injustice and how much brokenness there is in our society. He came to see America not as a dream, he said, near the end of his life, but a nightmare, in his words, because of our country's racism, poverty, militarism, and materialism. And though we have made some progress, aren't we still haunted by these four evils? Racism, poverty, militarism, and materialism. In an article in our denominational magazine, Cornel West says we run the risk of sanitizing Martin Luther King and his message, of not realizing how truly radical he was. West writes that King was seeking a revolution. A revolution in our priorities, a reevaluation of our values, a reinvigoration of our public life. Now more than ever, Martin Luther King's witness and voice should be calling out to us, saying, "What are you going to do in these days? How are you going to address these problems and help bring about the beloved community? How will you use your power to help heal and bless our world?" This month, as we reflect on power, let us keep Reverend King's words and his witness before us. Let us be inspired by all of those who have, in their day, lived lives of courage and integrity and hope. All those who have, against the odds, found and used their power. Like those three black women, unsung heroes of the effort to put an American into space. Let us this month get in touch with our own power and our own particular callings so that we will be emboldened to ask, "How will I use this power that I have? And then we will have the courage to follow where that leads. Let us be a congregation aware of its own power and its potential. And let us use it these days for good. Let's not waste it. Let's not waste it. Amen.